Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom, and Happy New Year. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Last month, UN Climate Change Conference in Azerbaijan produced an agreement by which wealthier societies would, by 2035, transfer $300 billion annually to poor countries to pay for the development of green energy sources and to help them cope with the rigors of climate change. This wealth transfer scheme confirms, yet again, that the primary purpose of the climate change activism is a socialistic redistribution of wealth. It sure won't help our nation in any way, but it sure will make a lot of dictators richer. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What did you do on New Year's Eve, Skip? Or were you just staying at home acting like an old guy?
Well, I don't have to act as much as I used to. I pretty much just stayed home and celebrated, watched the ball drop, and, you know, same old, same old.
You know, there's something really wonderful about family, though, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I like it. I'll be really sad when all my kids are gone.
Yeah, of course, they'll have new ones for you.
They'll drop them off, too.
Uh-huh. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss the mess in the Middle East. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. James Atticus Bowden graduated from West Point and is now a member of the MacArthur Society of West Point grads. We'll talk about that society. Then veteran Tim Barber will discuss helping hurting vets. Next, we'll review last weekend's bowl games in which both Army and Navy played and won. And Teresa Robinson will introduce another female veteran.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Well, folks, it appears that terrorism has arrived in our nation. I fear that the murders by the Islamic terrorist in New Orleans and the electric car that was burning outside Trump Towers may well be the beginning of a bad time for us. I hope I'm wrong. Given that our borders have been wide open for 4 years now, is there any reason that any group that wants to hurt us, any terrorist or criminal group, isn't here and set up? We know there are South American criminal cartels here. And since our loose and goofy security is about to really get tight, what better time to start the attacks? One does wonder what our FBI and sister organizations have been doing, given that they totally missed this. Okay, take it from here, Skip.
Well, Colonel, faced with entrenched and aggressive opposition to a rule change that would open the floodgates for men to play women's sports, the Biden administration has abandoned its efforts to rewrite landmark legislation to serve the transgender agenda. In a dose of dry, bureaucratic language, the Education Department published its surrender, saying that the proposal revised Title IX, a rule that ensures equal opportunity for women, so that transgender individuals would be allowed to do as they please, would be withdrawn. The Education Department said that with more than 150,000 public comments on President Biden's effort to institutionalize access by men to women's sports, multiple lawsuits to block the rule, and the upcoming end to the Biden administration, it was dropping efforts to impose the rule, according to Just the News. The rule, had it been imposed, would have allowed men access to women's sports, as well as bathrooms, locker rooms, and other facilities all across our nation. The Biden administration had proposed the rule in April 2023.
Who'd ever think that anyone in the Biden administration would admit that there's a difference between men and women, or admit that men can do some things better than women? Wow.
Remember last month when the head of Russia's nuclear, biological, and chemical defense forces, Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, was killed by a bomb planted near an apartment block in Moscow? Did you also know that Kirillov was sentenced in absentia by a Ukrainian court over Russia's alleged use of banned chemical weapons? Indeed, Ukraine's security service says it has recorded over 4,800 uses of chemical weapons on the battlefield since 2022.
Gee, the use of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons on the battlefield is a violation of all international rules of war. On the other hand, Russia doesn't obey anybody's rules. And yes, they are our enemy.
And China has launched the first of its new line of amphibious assault ships in its biggest one yet, strengthening what is already the world's largest navy. The Sichuan, a Type 076 new generation amphibious assault ship, was put into the water at a launch and naming ceremony late last month. With a full load displacement of 40,000 tons, the warship ranks among the world's largest amphibious assault ships. Featuring a dual island superstructure and full-length flight deck, the People's Liberation Army Navy said in a statement. China Bugle, a news outlet associated with their Navy's news media center, reported the ship will play a key role in transforming and developing the Chinese Navy and enhancing its combat capabilities in the far seas. The Sichuan is capable of launching fighter jets and unmanned drones from an electromagnetic catapult. It is designed to carry ground troops in landing craft with air support.
This is a very threatening ship, especially to Taiwan. China wants to be feared. That makes it easier to get its way in negotiations. China is definitely our biggest enemy, and we do need to get them out of our country.
And President-elect Donald Trump announced Kevin Moreno Cabrera as the incoming U.S. ambassador to Panama, escalating his critique of Panama's management of the Panama Canal. Trump has repeatedly accused Panama of exploiting the U.S. through what he called a complete ripoff, making this appointment a key move ahead of his January inauguration. Cabrera has a history of promoting international trade and economic growth. Trump praised him as a fierce fighter for America First values and emphasized his deep understanding of Latin American politics. This appointment follows weeks of tense exchanges between Trump and Panamanian President Laurentino Cortizo. Trump has hinted at reconsidering the U.S. control of the canal, a move that would dramatically alter the region's geopolitical landscape. Cortizo has dismissed Trump's claims, defending Panama's sovereignty over the crucial shipping route. The Panama Canal dispute reflects Trump's broader agenda of renegotiating international relationships to favor American interests. His tough rhetoric on Panama mirrors recent comments targeting Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau over trade imbalances.
This could be a really sticky deal, especially as China now plays a role in the use of the Panama Canal. I'm not sure how much of a role, but they've been involved for years. We built the canal in the early 1900s. We gave it to Panama in 1997. That said, Panama's control of the canal is not favorable to our interests.
And since we're speaking about China, the Chinese government recently placed sanctions on seven companies in response to recent U.S. announcements of military sales and aid to Taiwan, the self-governing island that China claims as part of its territory. The sanctions also come in response to the recent approval of our government's annual defense spending bill, which a Chinese foreign ministry statement said includes multiple negative sections on China.
This may help us do what we need to do, stop buying from or selling to China. This will be a long and hard road, but one we need to tackle.
And aviation experts said that Russian air defense fire was likely responsible for the recent plane crash that killed 38 people and left all 29 survivors injured. Azerbaijan Airlines Embraer 190 was an en route from Azerbaijan's capital of Baku to the Russian city of Grozny in the North Caucasus when it was diverted for reasons still unclear and crashed while making an attempt to land in Aktu in Kazakhstan after flying east across the Caspian Sea.
This is interesting. A single civilian airliner flies in or near Russia and it gets shot down. We have hundreds of drones all over several of our states, including over our military fields, and we have done nothing and claim not to even know who runs them. Wow.
And NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said that the military alliance will step up patrols in the Baltic Sea region as Finnish investigators work to establish whether a ship linked to Russia sabotaged undersea cables there last month. Finnish authorities seized control of the ship, the Eagle S, as they tried to establish whether it had damaged a power cable linking Finland and Estonia and several data cables. It was the latest in a string of incidents involving the disruption of key infrastructure in the region.
There have been clear attacks on undersea cables in this area as Russian-friendly ships drag their anchors across the areas. things are getting more and more dangerous, while our nation gets less and less combat ready. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CVAfrontlines.com. That's CVAfrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel. We'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll talk with West Point grad James Atticus Bowden about the need to reset the standards at West Point. At ease, troops, take a break. In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. I'm often asked, at what age should you start teaching your kids about guns? There's no magic age, as all kids are different. The most important thing is to teach them gun safety. Teach them never to touch a gun unless mom or dad are supervising. And always keep your guns locked up in a quality gun safe where kids can't get to them. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
It's time to switch to Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support the First and Second Amendment, the sanctity of life, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. Get a free month when you use the offer code FRONTLINES.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the Frontlines of Freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't a mess with inflation going crazy and prices up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin and Bullion. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. The Middle East is a mess. President Biden spent the last year trying, often ineffectively, to contain the spiraling violence there. Now the devastation in Gaza and the new uncertainty in Syria show some geopolitical gains for us, though Biden's team had little to do with them. Our main adversary there, Iran, has seen its so-called axis of resistance devastated in the past 15 months since Hamas terrorists stormed into Israel on October 7, 2023, killing about 1,200 Israelis and taking hundreds of hostages. Hamas and Hezbollah, once Iran's most formidable proxies, are reeling after months of attacks by Israel. A much-feared possible regional war also didn't happen, and Israel got the better of Iran in their first-ever exchange of direct strikes. Tehran and Moscow proved unable to protect the al-Assad regime in Syria, whose removal had long seemed unachievable for us. There's hope a ceasefire deal in Gaza might finally be close. That would lead to the release of hostages and even end the civilian suffering. We're seeing a Russia and Iran retreat, and we're now at the point where the battlefield successes have enabled a transition in political processes in both Gaza and Lebanon, said Dana Stout, who was Biden's Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for the Middle East from 2021 to 23. The Biden administration remains accused by some of not doing enough to stop Israeli campaign that killed over 45,000 Palestinians and 3,000 people in Lebanon. These numbers include Hamas and Hezbollah terrorists. And the Biden team has difficulty showing any positive developments resulting from its efforts, rather than despite them. Instead, our leverage is now limited as powerful regional players take the lead. Israel's forces delivered the blows against Hamas and Hezbollah, often against our warnings. In Syria, Turkey backed the rebel forces whose offensive drove Assad to flee to Russia, and Israeli strikes were the ones that took out his military capabilities. The damage Israel has done to Hamas and Hezbollah at about the same time as the fall of Assad in Syria means that Iran is at its weakest point since 1979, but they still got lots of money. Biden has failed to deliver a Gaza ceasefire deal. Netanyahu's government also resisted his demands to allow a regular flow of humanitarian aid to desperate Palestinians. Of course, much of that aid was controlled by Hamas once it arrived. Here in the States, the domestic political fallout from the war eroded enthusiasm, particularly among progressives and Arab and Muslim Americans, as the Democrats sought to keep the White House. Kamala really didn't help. Biden also regularly warned Israel against a Lebanon campaign, only to support it when it went better than expected. Our government has consistently argued that its military support for Israel and its positioning of additional military assets in the region deterred Iran and enabled Israeli success. And there is some truth there. There has been disagreements about the collateral damage, civilian casualties, and certain Israeli decisions at different points since October 7th. The Biden team seems to believe that they're on the cusp of delivering a decently set table to hand over to the Trump team. In dealing with the unfolding chaos in Syria, Secretary of State Blinken again made the rounds of Middle East cities to press our priorities, making his 12th trip to the region since October 7th. There are a few apparent positive results. Asked in Jordan about Israeli actions in Syria that have angered some of the Arab states, Blinken said he supported them. As he wandered across the region, it was also clear that we're also struggling with Turkey, which has backed millions in Syria that have fought against the U.S.-backed Kurdish forces who are keeping ISIS in check and guarding thousands of the Islamist group's fighters. But the future is uncertain. Syria's new government is likely to want the oil wealth lying in Kurdish territory, and Turkey is unlikely to accept an autonomous zone in an area, given that it views the Kurdish militias as terrorists. At the same time, President Trump, who praised the Turkish leader Erdogan as, quote, a very smart guy, unquote, with a, quote, major military force, unquote, has said we should stay out of Syria. Trump may pull out the 2,000 U.S. troops stationed in Syria as a part of a mission to counter ISIS, further reducing our leverage there and allowing Turkey, which he said, quote, is going to hold the key in Syria, end quote, a freer hand in politically enabling attacks against the Kurds. Quote, right now, there's a lot of indefinites, said Trump. Nobody knows what's going to happen in Syria, end quote. President Trump's common sense and his America First policy will support our ally Israel and let the Middle East attempt to resolve its own problems. Hey, remember, there's almost never been peace there. And those are my comments for today. Americans, we owe our freedom to the sacrifice and courage of our heroes in uniform. Did you know you can support our military, veterans, and first responders just by using your cell phone? Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They put the cause ahead of profits, and that's why I'm a proud partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to while giving back to our heroes. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support Folds of Honor, Tunnels to Towers, and more. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. That's patriotmobile.com/frontlines. And get a free month of service when you use the offer code frontlines. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Well, Colonel, many military members are getting a happy new year this year with a very nice pay increase. Around 500,000 military members that are E4 and below are getting a targeted salary hike, which will increase their base salaries by 10% above the annual military-wide pay increase of 4.5%. So effectively, they're getting a 14.5% bump in base pay. You know, currently, many of those troops earn less than $30,000 in base pay. although they do receive other financial compensations like housing stipends and free health care. The targeted raise will bring nearly all of them above the $30,000 mark. Members ranked E2 with 2 years of service will see their base pay rise from about $27,000 to $31,000 a year. And troops that are ranked E4 with 3 years of service will see their pay raise go from about $35,000 a year to more than $40,000. However, this 10% pay increase for the junior enlisted, it doesn't go into effect until April. However, the 4.5% rise for all troops, that went into effect on January 1st. The 4.5% raise that went to all military people represents the third consecutive year of pay increases of more than 4%. For an E7 with 10 years of service, or an O2 with 2 years of service, the 4.5% raise means about $200 more per month, or about $2,600 a year in extra salary. For comparison, an O4 with 12 years of service will see about $400 more per month. Now, the pay raise is not just to cover the increase of the cost of living, but it's also designed to help with recruiting and retention by making military life more appealing to families. Now, for retired military members, they only saw a 2.5% cost of living adjustment, which is based on the Consumer Price Index, which measures the cost of consumer goods. This raise is slightly less than the 3.2% increase last year and much less than the 8.7% increase in 2023. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Happy New Year's.
Thanks, Roland. That was wonderful. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Army vet James Atticus Bowden. Then we'll discuss the Officers Christian Fellowship, a group open to all members of the military community. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show Army veteran James Atticus Bowden. Like me, Jim is a West Point grad. He's graduated 8 years after I did, so he's just a kid. And he's very much active in the MacArthur Society, a group of grads who want to see our alma mater return to our founding roots. So, welcome to the show, Jim.
Well, thank you, Denny. I'm really glad to be here.
Jim, start by telling us when and why you went to West Point and how it affected you.
Okay, well, talking about yourself is the most boring subject in the world, but I'll try and talk fairly fast and get past it. So I'm an Army brat. And I'm also, I always add this because it's important in terms of how I see the world. I am a Southerner to the eyeballs, come from two large Southern families, first generation off the farm, in both cases from my parents, but I am a Southerner without an accent because I'm an Army brat. So as an Army brat, I grew up in the Army. I have memories my whole life of either my dad or being on an Army post or having access to an Army post and growing up around the Army. So the Army to me was always an obligation to serve the country, to serve in the Army. Then when it came time to graduate from the high school, I started school earlier than most of my peers because I started school in Tennessee when my dad was in Vietnam in 1956 on an unaccompanied tour. And we spent the year in Tennessee with his family, West Tennessee. So I was 17 years old, graduating from high school. The Vietnam War was cranking up. And frankly, I wanted to go to Vietnam and kill a commie for mommy. But I knew my parents would never sign the papers for me to enlist at 17 because my dad, I knew better. He's a World War II guy. So I had options. And I applied to West Point because, I grew up around the Army. There was also one of my dad's boss, a general officer, gave me a copy of the book, The West Point Story. I read it when I was 10 years old. And I was definitely interested in it. And frankly, I went to West Point in 1968 to go to Vietnam. I went to West Point to be in the Army. I did not go to West Point to go to West Point, if that makes any sense. So my perspective, and I've talked about this with some of my classmates, was a bit different. I was not a great cadet. I wanted to be in the Army, but I didn't really care so much. I knew that my parents wouldn't sign the papers, as I said, for me to be enlisted at 17. And I also knew it was better to be a lieutenant in the Army than to be a private. So I was accepted at two other schools, and I could have gone ROTC. But I went to West Point because I said to myself, I'll always ask myself, what if I didn't go? And then when I went there, I stayed. And frankly, I hated it. I hated the restrictions. I hated the confinement. I hated it. I'll just say that. But I loved my classmates, truly. I loved being in their company. I loved their respect and being in their company, my band of brothers. And I also was intent on graduating and going infantry and volunteering and going to Vietnam. I read enough history as a kid to think that the war was going to last 10 years, 65 to 75. And I was actually right on that, even as a teenager. But I didn't know we were going to quit. So when I was in Ranger school, in Winter Ranger, in the mountain phase, the war ended in Vietnam. So anyway, I'd volunteered to go. My class was not allowed to go as a first assignment, but I had a psych P, one of my electives, social psychology, who was going over as an advisor and said, who wants to go? You know, contact me after you graduate and after you get to your unit, and I'll bring you in as my follow-on as an advisor in Vietnam. I volunteered to him. Branch didn't care, but I went to West Point to be in the Army. That was it.
Okay. And you got in the Army. What did you do when you got in? Obviously, you went to Ranger school. Then what?
Yep. I was an Airborne Ranger Infantry officer. A lot of people say this, but I mean it. I love being in the Army. And I love being in the infantry. And I love being in the field. Now, I will say this. I'm not Audie Murphy. I was a Cold War guy. I never saw green tracers coming at me. Okay, I do not have the CIB. So, but I served in five divisions, so I didn't exactly avoid the enemy. I was in the 82nd, I was in the 2nd Infantry, I was in the 24th Infantry MEC, I was in the 2nd Armored Division in Germany, and 3rd Armored Division in Germany. My last duty, I was the executive officer of the Iron Brigade. Our job was the Hunfield Bold in the Gap in Germany, and our job as a brigade was to stop two divisions or three divisions that are going to come through into the Hunfield Bold. And I left in 1989. My final assignment was at TRADOC as a speechwriter for a 4-star, which is an incredibly painful job. And I, my last 2 years, I led a study called Army 21, which set me up actually for my civilian life, Army Future Study, about the Army from 1992, looking at the years 2005, 2015, a fascinating study, great contractor support. And it's interesting how many things we got right. It was very wide, very about an inch thick, but very wide study. And it's interesting how many things that we really called right about the future. And then the last thing that I omitted, I got selected to teach in the Department of Social Sciences at West Point. So I went to Harvard Graduate School at the Kennedy School of Government. And then I taught U.S. government at West Point, and I taught electives in public administration, and I taught research and methodology for social sciences. While I was there, I went back to grad school because the PhD program at Harvard, where I went, closed down for a year or so. So I went and I applied for a PhD program at Columbia, got it accepted, went to Columbia, and then, and this is the story of my life, I was young and dumb, and I went to the Marine Command and Staff College. And while I was there, my paper at Marine Staff College was the basis of my PhD. but a 100-page paper about the Army reorganization in 1973. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back to troops. I got to go back to troops. Can't wait to go back to troops. Going to go be in a Bradley unit. And I thought I would go back and I'd write one page a day to make a 100-page paper, become a 300-page PhD. And of course, it never happened. Because once I got back to the field, I worked my butt off and it never happened. So I am all but dissertation for life from Columbia. So that's it.
Okay. And one of the things that you did after you got out of the Army was you learned about and got involved with the MacArthur Society. We're about out of time for this segment, but what is the MacArthur Society?
The MacArthur Society are graduates of the military academy, Army people who are interested, and others who are simply like-minded, who have concerns about the United States Military Academy and concerns about things that are going on there that are off. The MacArthur Society are a bunch of West Point graduates and other people who care about the United States Military Academy, not necessarily Army veterans or West Point graduates, but people who care about what's going on in the academy. And we have a number of concerns. And those concerns have made us organize because we want to carry those concerns to people who are in positions of authority, because we're not, and we don't pretend to be, but to carry our concerns with them to try and fix some things that we think are wrong or off, or that we suspect are off. And it's complicated because it's largely grown out of this. Graduates saw something. There was the honor scandal, the screed that was written by about to make an anti-racist West Point in 2020, or issues with drug abuse. And they have contacted West Point, and they've been blown off, or they've been ignored, or they've been patted on the head. And then they a number of them said, okay, well, I'll do a Freedom of Information Act. I want to find out what's going on. I want to get the ground truth. And they got half answers, half truths. In some cases, they got no answer, which is illegal. And in other cases, they got documents that were redacted. And we're not talking about state secrets. We're talking about information that ought to be accessible to the public, to the general American public.
There's more to discuss about the MacArthur Society, and Jim is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do. Well, I used to before I got into my mid-80s. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. If you ever have to defend yourself or your family, you will likely need legal support, as there is almost always an investigation. After you call 911, call U.S. Law Shield so you can have immediate legal support. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events they never thought would happen to them. Their attorneys are available 24/7, 365. Learn more or sign up at uslawshield.com, promo code Frontlines. That's uslawshield.com, promo code Frontlines.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with West Point grad James Atticus Bowden about the MacArthur Society of West Point graduates. Okay, Jim, you talked about the fact that there's some things going on that at least many graduates saw, not the people in charge. and they sought to find out some details and, let's just say, did not get straight, honest answers. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, well, let me give you a specific example. So in the summer of 2021, my class in 4 years in between the five-year reunions has a thing called a mini reunion. So we had a mini reunion in Utah. My class president gave a presentation, and he talked about a discussion he had had with the superintendent. And he told our class, about the 80 classmates and their spouses in at this place in Utah. And he said that the questions given, the grilling that some congressmen had had, one in specific I could name, that the congressman had given the soups was just politics, quote unquote. And secondly, that the they're not teaching CRT and they weren't doing that at West Point. So this is 2021. So in September 2021, good old SOCP, I went back and back then, you can't do it now, but you could do it then. They go into the green book online. I went back and dug through the green book, through the courses where it was laid out. And I looked at the text they were using. I looked at the authors they were reading. And guess what? They're Marxists. They're cultural Marxists. Now, the people who write this stuff really dislike being called cultural Marxists. But if you go back and if you study Marxism, and I have, that's one of the courses I actually took in graduate school. I studied Marxism, and I read the original authors. If you go back and look at these books that are written, White Fragility, you name it. I read 18 books that specifically deal with third wave feminism and with CRT and DEI. So I am the most woke guy in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I can tell you to park your privilege in a heartbeat. But when I read those books, in the foreword and the index in the back, they reference the people that they get their ideas from. And guess what? It's Marxism. It's cultural Marxism. It is Marxism that's evolved the ideas from the French Revolution, which is a mouthful. It's human secularist totalitarianism. So when the soup said they weren't teaching it, he wasn't being truthful. And then you go in there and you look, and there was a course that was being taught. And the name of the course was Critical Race Theory. Well, what we don't know when you look at the actual things they're teaching, are they teaching this is critical race theory and it's absolutely totally bogus? Or are they teaching it and saying, well, why don't we consider this? Why don't we look at the left hand and the right hand? Why don't we consider these propositions? The fact is they're teaching it. And the threads of it are in there everywhere. The other thing is this. If you look at a number of the other things that are going on in the academy, the fact that they have, although they may have recently gotten rid of it, they had a position called dignity captain. Hey, what does a dignity captain do? They have a dignity captain has something to do with politically correct identity groups and people not having their feelings hurt or politically correct speech not being said. Which I find remarkable between for 17 to 22-year-olds to be able to keep their mouths curbed. So there are all these indications that there are that was not truthful. So let me land it with that. I put that together in a paper, short paper, and my 50th reunion was coming up. I decided not to publish it to my class because I didn't want to cause hard feelings before the 50th, but I later revised it and took off references to my class, and it's on our website about Marxism being taught at West Point. It's on the website of the MacArthur Society.
So the bottom line is there's some things that need to be fixed, and it's not just the critical race theory and that kind of stuff. It's the honesty. One of the two big things for me when I was a cadet was the honor code, and that apparently is no longer we've seen 100 things in the last decade or so where the honor code that you and I grew up with is not there. And when the leadership will say something's not happening and it clearly is, we have a real problem.
We do. In fact, of all the concerns we have, we have concerns over what is the basic leadership theory that they're applying. There's the attrition model, which you and I grew up under. And then there's also the leader development model. And there are also possibilities of having a mixture of the two. issues about the leadership development, issues about academics, academic standards, the fact that the superintendent has a number of slots where he can appoint cadets, usually athletes, without any regard to SAT or ACT scores, that there are issues of meritocracy within the academy. But the biggest issue of all is the honor system. Because if you don't have the honor system, what distinguishes West Point from the other academies? And if I share with you a real quick story, and then I'll come back to the specifics of what's going on today. The last lecture my class had at West Point, class of 72, is Lieutenant General, then later Four-Star General Zace spoke. Zace was an enlisted man in World War II and was not an academy graduate. And the lecture he gave my class was, he said, what West Point does for the officer corps is you have a pitcher of water and you drop one drop of ink in that pitcher of water. It colors the entire pitcher of water. And he said, what the West Point brings to the officer corps and what the officer corps establishes for the Army, what the Army does for the nation is the honor code and integrity. Without it, we are not the American Army. Without it, we are not the American nation. And the honor system is from West Point, and it has got to be there. Well, we found out, there's actually a grad, I can't remember if he's class 62 or what, but a guy more senior than I am, looked at all the honor violations, and most honor violations do not end, in the past 10, 15 years, most honor violations do not end in dismissal. They end in the cadet getting a second chance. And that should bring concerns, especially when you have a firstie, I think it was a firstie, it was a firstie or a cow, stealing a watch out of the PX. When you have a firstie stealing a watch out of the PX, you've got a problem. So yes, that issue of the honor system. I also had the honor captain from a previous class, a very recent class. I don't want to name which one it is, so I don't put him on the spot. He read some of the stuff we have online, made connections were made, and he talked to me for about an hour and a half from Europe. And I took notes, and he talked about what he saw in the honor system. And what he saw was some real problems with the toleration clause and real problems with a disconnect between the fact that the cadets don't feel like they own the honor system I understand why, because legally, only the Secretary of the Army has the authority to dismiss a cadet. Now, the Secretary of the Army had delegated that to the superintendent. Superintendent would do it. The Secretary of the Army would do a check mark until there was a challenge case in the late 1970s where it became abundantly clear when the Secretary of the Army overrode the superintendent and reversed that. But there's a disconnect in that the cadets don't believe that the officer corps is going to back them up. And the officers, in some respects, may have suspicions about how much the cadets are actually enforcing it and not selectively enforcing it.
Jim, thank you for your thoughts. Wrap them up for us. What points do you want us to take out of this?
Okay. First of all, the MacArthur Society is working hand in glove with the squids of the Naval Academy and the zoomies of the Air Force Academy, the old grads at STARS, STARRS, at the Calvert Task Group. And we are working together to look at and to suggest, because we're not in charge, things that need to be retained, restored, reformed, and improved to do the harder right instead of the easier wrong at the service academies. We're working together to see what needs to be retained, restored, reformed, and improved to do the harder right instead of the easier wrong. We're looking at and want to study and help study what needs to be retained to meet the needs of the services for the next 50 years, 70 years through the end of this century, the same way the MacArthur reforms served the academies for West Point, at least for 70 years. We want to restore the honor systems, academic excellence, military and naval relevance with the highest standards of meritocracy, achievement, and integrity. We want to end race-based admissions of candidates, DEI, CRT, indoctrination. We want to reform the selection of faculty and administration, the core curriculum, and take a real hard look at intercollegiate athletics. We want to improve what's going on there to motivate more graduates to serve successful full careers in uniform and to improve the process of periodic review and accountability for the academies. That's what we're about. That's what we're doing. We're not in a position of authority. We're not telling the academies what needs to be done. We want to be partners in making them better from the already position that they're in, which is being really good. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your comments, brother. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Army vet Tim Barber about helping vets, and we'll discuss last weekend's Army and Navy bowl games. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. U.S. Law Shield is a part of the Frontlines of Freedom team. If you have a weapons for self-defense of your family and yourself, and you ever need to use a legal weapon, you'll need legal defense. U.S. Law Shield is the team my wife and I use. Go to uslawshield.com and use the promo code Frontlines. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, maybe 20 more push-ups. Then grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.